Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Tired of nicks, cuts, and bumps? It's time to ditch the blade. Nair, the award-winning number one hair removal brand, gives you silky, smooth skin in as little as 3 minutes. That's smooth that lasts for days longer than shaving. Easy to use, blade-free, dermatologist tested, and made for all skin types. Plus, discover our new sensational fragrances that turn hair removal into a whole vibe. Shave less, glow more. Find Nair at all major retailers.
If your hair isn't performing like it used to, the answer isn't another hat. It's a proactive approach. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement brand. It's also NSF certified for sport and the official hair growth partner of Major League Baseball, the only hair growth supplement trusted by the pros. Visit Nutrafol.com, enter promo code PMT, get $10 off your first month subscription, and you get free shipping. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code PMT.
On this episode of Project Big Screen, we are talking about Stranger Things Season 5, Volume 1, which is 4 episodes. Also Zootopia 2, and then we will do a ranking of the top 10 talking animal movies, all that and more, coming up on Project Big Screen. All right, Project Big Screen, Episode 9, November 30th. Happy December for when this comes out, first episode of December. We have a very different looking crew here because we're down three members in one weekend. Kirk, I believe, is back next week for us. We also have Ken Jack on his honeymoon. He might be gone for, I think, another week as well. And then Clemmer is off filming one of his shows in San Francisco / Santa Clara. So no Clemmer. We have two of our lovely esteemed coworkers, Kelly Keegs, Robbie Fox. We never had Kelly on our old show. We had Robbie on our old show many a times, and they're here today
first
to
guest.
Talk about.
I think I was yes, first, wasn't I?
That's true. Yeah,
oh, that's nice.
Yep. Now you're first. Utopia 2.
Yeah, I won't take it personally that I've never been asked, but here I am. So
hey, you're asked for this the Stranger Things.
It only took three members being out.
I know, right? I'm literally the last resort, but yes, I'm available on a Sunday.
Well, no offense to Clemmer, but it was either bend to Clemmer's schedule or have two other people on, and it was a very easy have Robbie and Kelly on. Zootopia 2 we'll be talking about today. Also, Stranger Things Season 5, Volume 1, which that does get a little confusing. That is 4 episodes. Volume 1 is the first 4 episodes. The next 3 come out on Christmas, and then the 8th one is on New Year's Eve, also in theaters. We'll be talking about that briefly. A little different than we usually do our movie review. We won't be doing it, you know, like score-based and ratings and stuff. Just kind of talking about the season, what we think of it so far, and then a couple movie news items. And then we'll be doing, in honor of Zootopia, top 10 talking animal movies. Great ranking.
I was so excited when you told me that. I didn't realize how many talking animal movies I love.
Yeah, there are a lot.
I'm gonna note one off the top. There was a list that I saw. Because, you know, obviously when we do these lists, like the best thing to do is just find other lists and like just, okay, you may forget about ones here and there. There was like two or three lists that had Air Bud. Air Bud doesn't talk in those movies.
Huh. I saw that too. I was so confused.
Right? He doesn't. And that's not like a Mandela. Like, you're an idiot if you think he talks. Like, he doesn't talk in that movie. He plays basketball.
He talks with his skills.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. He doesn't talk on the court, Robbie.
Yeah, exactly. He talks
Zootopia 2. Zootopia 2. We'll talk more about Zootopia 2's box office when we do our news thing, because it's unbelievable. So we'll get to that in a little bit. We'll save that discussion for later. But Detective Judy Hopps, Nick Wilde find themselves on the twisting trail of a mysterious reptile who turns the mammal metropolis of Zootopia upside down, testing their growing partnership like never before. They go undercover in new parts of town to crack the case. That's long been... I've seen it before, but that's long been like a thing online. People are like, where are the reptiles? Where are the birds in Zootopia? And that is half of that is a big part. It's also the other half maybe as well later on in the movie. Written by Jared Bush, who also wrote the first Zootopia, wrote the screenplay for Moana, Encanto, Moana 2, which came out last year, and then also doing the screenplay for the new Moana, which I'm imagining he just took the first Moana script and said, here it is. Here's the first one. It's the same thing.
Right.
sequel to Zootopia from 2016, which won Best Animated Feature. That movie made a killing, made $1.03 billion at the box office. It is very big overseas as well. It's huge overseas, especially in Asia. One of the Disney parks has a pretty hefty Zootopia presence. I think it's Shanghai. I might be wrong on that, but it's one of the ones in Asia has a very big Zootopia presence. So it is very big over there. Jennifer Goodwin back as Judy Hopps. She was in that. Did anyone watch that show on ABC? Once Upon a Time, or Once?
Yes, what's it called? Once I watched
upon?
It.
I never.
Once
did.
Upon a Time. I don't know where. I feel like it's expanded since then. It, like, the show stayed on, but then it turned into something else, and I kind of lost track of it. But in college, I was all over it.
I never fully understood that show. Then I remember one day there was live action Elsa and Anna in that show, and I was like, "What the?
That's wait, the only
what?
Thing I know about it." When they brought that in, people were like, "Oh my god!" Yeah,
yeah. I had to obviously when I worked at Disney, it was a thing that we promoted a lot on Good Morning America. So that's mostly what I knew about it. Jason Bateman, Kiwe Kwan is in this now, first time in it. He plays a pretty big character, plays the snake. Fortune Feimster plays a beaver, kind of like a podcaster beaver.
Great character.
Yeah. Conspiracy beaver.
Davis Rathbone is in the movie as a big character. I won't say who or what. Andy Samberg, Idris Elba, Patrick Warburton. I could go on and on. And also, I didn't know this until this morning. Gooch sent this to me. One of the animals that gets stuck in the tuba for about 2 seconds in this movie was voiced by The Rock.
I saw that. Yeah,
that's real.
The Rock, Bob Iger, I think, does a Bob Tiger.
hilarious.
Roman Reigns and CM Punk are the zebras.
We're getting into B-movie territory.
It's crazy. Very well received on Rotten Tomatoes, 91-95 split, critics audiences, 7.8 IMDb, 73 Metacritic, 3.9 on Letterboxd. I'll throw mine out there. I really liked it. So the first one I love. The first one's incredible. One of the better animated movies Disney's ever released. I gave the first one a 94. Fantastic movie. I like this one a lot, just not quite as much. There's a lot of things that they did, though, that I was like, this is nice, because a lot of these Disney and Pixar, and also, I mean, it's on, I mean, whatever, Disney. We're known as obviously the very anti-Disney podcast. Disney gets a lot of shit for this, but let's be honest, other places do this too, as they come out with the 90th Minions movie next year. But like, they didn't lean into too many, like, I guess cliches or tropes, or like overdoing the things that worked. Like, for some of these Disney and Pixar sequels, you would think that like the sloth would probably have like an hour and a half screen time, just because that was like always a thing that people remember. And I thought they handled that like perfectly. It was like, it was a nice nod, brought the character back, nothing crazy. I was quite pleased with this movie. I liked it. I had a very good time with it. Gave it an 85. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Robbie, you go next.
This Robbie?
No, yeah, it's true. We have two Robbies. Fox, yes. Yeah, Gooch is Gooch.
I didn't like it quite as much as you. I agree with you on the first Zootopia. Love the first Zootopia. I think it's one of the best like family movies that adults can obviously enjoy with the kids. The kids will pick up on the references maybe later in life. This movie I thought was that almost repeated with like Control F, Predators, Reptiles. It almost came off so similar to the first one in its themes of like coexistence and stuff. I still thought it was good though. It still worked for me. I like some of the new additions. The Danny Trejo character, Jesus. Oh my God, that was a great addition. Loved him. I thought it was like, it didn't do anything that the first one did as good as the first one, but still it's you know, obviously a high bar. It felt like almost a straight to VHS, like Revenge of Jafar sequel to Zootopia to me.
Whoa. That's fair. Wow. Okay. That's what a reference.
I don't mean that. I liked that. I liked that, by the way. I like Revenge of Jafar for reference. Yeah.
It's a great movie.
Okay. Because when I think the straight to VHS like sequels of the old Disney animated movies, my mind just goes straight to like, that's trash. Like, because the Lion King one with Kova.
Wait, Lion King 1.5?
1.5? Yeah.
Well, 1.5 is basically the movie, right?
Don't start with calling that trash. One and a half is
just
great.
It's just Lion King, right? Just from a different perspective.
Yeah.
From Timon and Pumbaa.
Which one's the one with Kova? Oh, I hated that guy.
So give a this is tough. I'm gonna have to make Kel. You're gonna have to do this too. This is tough, obviously, on the spot. But give a score for the first and the second.
I would say first, similar to you, first is like a 90 in my book. Second, I would say is a 70, 75, somewhere in that range for me. Yeah.
Okay. Kelly, what about you? What do you think about Zootopia 2? We haven't even said it yet. It should be Tootopia for being. We were very critical of Now You See Me 3. It should have been Now You Three Me. What do you think of the second Zootopia?
Tootopia. I loved it. I'll tell you what. I've not seen Zootopia, the original, probably since it came out. And I remember the fanfare when it came out. I remember how everybody was going crazy for it. And I really liked it. I probably put it somewhere in the mid 80s, low 90s. The first one. The second one, I'll probably put it around 80, between 80 and 83, because I agree with Bob. It was kind of the same story, but I didn't mind the story. I like that there's like this city, you know, control situation. I like that kind of stuff. And I thought the characters were funny, and I love snake stuff. And I feel like there was a lot of snake stuff. So I like that. And
good snake too. I like the snake.
I like the snake. I like the snake. And you know what I also noticed about it? It was really good with the sounds that the animals make when they're moving, specifically the snakes. Mm. Like, I don't think this is like a spoiler or anything, but when the snake moves, you can like hear its scales, you know? And I kept focusing on that. And I thought it was really funny and just a good addition. I also think that Jason Bateman's voice of as the fox is hilarious. Like, I'm gonna laugh every time. It's just Jason Bateman, like, as a fox. Like, I can't picture him as a cartoon because it's the same cadence, same everything. So the characters really made it for me. But I agree, the story was just a little, you know, it's done before.
Gooch, you fall in line with what they kind of both said there?
Yeah. The first one for me is about an 85. I think it's really good. I think it's great. This one is a 75 for me. It's about as good as I think Zootopia 2 could have been. And there's something with these sequels, and I want to like them. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and give them as much leeway as possible. But there's a novelty to original entries that just gets lost here, where the world isn't as new and wonderful as it is in the original. So that just takes points off for me. And this isn't really innovating on the original story in ways that would make it elevate to the original score. 75 out of 100 for me. Very fun. It's still like hilarious. I will say there was I would say 50-year-old man next to me who laughed at, I think, every single fucking joke, which did kind of, like, I mean, like, he really, like, for instance, like, you know, the part when they go into the snake's house, this isn't too much of a spoiler, and they see like the little measurements of like them getting older, like, and they measure it like sideways. Like he like guffawed.
I love that. That's great.
Like he was laughing at every little pun, but it was like every pun.
Clemmer loved it. You're saying.
We'll have to check out the TikTok review. Him just, he'll be doing little circles in his little review. 75 out of 100 for me. Really liked it. I think it's about as good as it could have been. Let's talk about it some more. There are some bits in there that I'd love to talk about.
So spoiler alert, I mean, whatever, for Zootopia. That's kind of funny to say. But we'll spoil it here a little bit. In the end of this movie, the snakes are brought into this universe. They were cast aside by what kind of – the Lynx family? Is it family of Lynx?
Lynxes.
Yeah. They were cast aside. Snakes had made the original plan for Zootopia. There's a funny – kind of area where all these reptiles go called Marsh Market, and they're gonna get rid of that. They're gonna bulldoze it and make it another snowland, like they did to the original land where the snakes were. But and then the post credit scene, there's also a feather, and that is kind of a thing that people have talked about. Like I said earlier, where are the reptiles, where are the birds? It seems as though Zootopia 3, it'll be about the birds. But the interesting thing for me is, like, I guess, like, why does this one work where these other fail that I've been honing on Disney and Pixar, but it goes for everyone, whether it be DreamWorks, whether it be Illumination. Like, why does this one work? Especially compared to, like, a year ago, Moana 2 came out. Now, Moana 2's problem was it was a TV series that they bundled together into a movie and quickly released it. And, like, this one, it's been 10 years. So, like, they did put some thought into this, and it was successful. And, like, I think, Gooch, what you said is very fair about these sequels. And, like, it's also one of the reasons why it's fascinating how Toy Story always nails it in a way that you're like, what the fuck? How did they do it again? And, like, I'm just going to assume they're going to do it a fifth time. So I don't know. For you, like, Robbie, like you think about recent, like, animated sequels that maybe don't work. Like, why does one work better? I guess that was kind of my big thing leaving the theater. I'm like, oh, they actually did a decent job with this.
Honestly, for me, I was leaving it thinking it was the structure. It's the detective story. Like, putting a detective story, it's like three things for me. It's the detective story structure. It's the world, because I do think the world is really interesting. Like Gooch said, it's not quite as fascinating as it is the first time, but the way they expand it with the reptiles and the underground stuff and the lynxes, I thought it was pretty interesting. And then it's what Kelly said. The characters are so good. Like Judy Hopps and Nick Wilde as a team, they're incredible. And then when you see the sloth, when they use Flash Flash 100-yard dash, like when they use him for a second, I love it. And they don't overdo it. Like, I think it's those three things. But for me, the main thing is like putting a almost like really genuinely treated detective story in this ridiculous Disneyfied like Zootopia or Zootropolis for our international viewers. I just like the detective story. I like it's almost like a whodunit in Disney.
Yeah, because there have been some good ones, right, Kelly? Like, I mean, like, where do you stand, like, Frozen 2 or Moana 2? Because, like, those had way less time in between compared to, like, this 10 years. Inside Out 2 example, that was, like, 10 years-ish.
Inside Out 2, like, I enjoyed Inside Out 2 not nearly as much as 1, but the people that loved Inside Out 2 really focused in on the new characters, on Anxiety, on Ennui. And I think that that itself brings people in. And then there's the nostalgia factor from the first one. And then you incorporate just a couple of new details and it's great. What I love, if we're doing slight spoilers, what I loved about Zootopia 2, the standout highlight for me by far was Marsh Market. I thought Marsh Market was very creative. Obviously we are already used to this big metropolis, and I love a metropolis with animals. I love talking animals. I love an animated movie. Like, I am very into all that. Marsh Market was such a departure from, you know, from the city of it all. And it still had so many hilarious details. And, like, you know, even them going up to the Nick Wilde calling the sea lion a seal and it getting insulted. Like, there are still those moments where they're so humanized while also dealing with these, like, animal issues and, like, wanting to be labeled correct. Like, it's just very funny how they've taken animal issues and turned them into, like, human issues. And I think that just moves the story along. And I think it makes it so much better. Whereas, like, Frozen 2, kind of the same story, kind of the same characters, a couple new people, whatever. And the songs weren't as good. Same thing. And then I just feel like that is always the struggle. Moana 2, I could not even tell you what happens in Moana 2. I know I saw it. I couldn't tell you what happened in it. It's just, Moana 1 was so
Moana
good.
Yeah, Moana 2 was, what a letdown that one. I mean, talk about, talking about rushing it out and not doing anything. Like, did Moana 2 do anything new? I think I'm with you. I can't remember a single thing from Moana 2.
No, I don't even know the premise. Like, I forget.
They kicked Lin-Manuel Miranda to the curb because he was doing Lion King.
Stupid.
Oh, yeah.
Should get him back.
Remember he did the Moana rap at the Oscars before they came out and sang? For no, the Moana rap, which had nothing to do with anything that was happening in the movie or the song. He's like, I'm just going to rap for like 30 seconds here.
Wow, that's Rob's friend last.
They said, so Disney's Jared Busher wrote this movie as teased that they're doing a completely different type of animated movie. I saw that as well. Is that another thing? Is it like, I don't know for you, Gooch, like, is it the style of animation? Because, like, Disney Animation Studios, their movies do look different than Pixar movies. It's a different style, right? It's obviously, it's a more animated version of their old cartoons and stuff like that. But they do seem to be moving into a different direction. He teased that they're going to do something completely different for 2028. And now there's a big reason why. There's a huge K-pop demon hunters in the room. That is the reason why I think people are going to try and do something different. He referenced that as well. He's like, they've been thinking about different style of animation. It's clearly worked for some. I mean, they have K-pop demon hunters, Spider-Verse, which has been unreal. Obviously, Spider-Verse, the next one's not coming out for like 15 years, it feels like. is that it too? Like, do they just need to, like, maybe, because as much as I want original stuff too, some of the original stuff is flop. So it's like, do they have to change up the way it looks? Like, will that maybe kind of reinvigorate some people? I don't know.
I'm not sure, because at the end of the day, as much as I have, like, disliked the sequel and rebooting of, like, pretty much every single Disney IP possible over the past 15 years, their animation has never slipped at any point. They have the best animators in the world. I don't really love the Pixar character designs of late, where they've done, like, the gumball face, where those big, like, big smiles and, like, over-exaggerated eyes. Like, I don't love that, but boy, oh boy, does everything look fantastic. They get better movie after movie. Even just, like, Soul 4 years ago. Oh, I mean, just
so good.
Incredible. So the hair, like, it just, their animation department is second to none. And if they wanted to, you know, reboot the whole thing and change their entire style, they'd have the manpower to do it. Like, they just, they can pull that off. You saw them do it. They went from 2D to 3D with no problems. Yeah. I have full faith in them in that department. Like, at no point have I ever doubted their animators.
Do you guys worry that if people do start pivoting towards the kind of animation in K-pop Demon Hunters, Spider-Verse, et cetera, that, because that is a very specific kind of animation. Like, I love it personally, but I think I would only think of those other things. Like, I feel like maybe it's the same way when Pixar started, how everything kind of looked like that. And now all the animated movies sort of look are like based off of that. So I wonder what will branch off of that kind of animation to make it a little different, because I do think it's, you know, at its core, K-pop Demon Hunter specifically is, you know, Korean. So it's got that feel to it. I wonder if, you know, how things down the road end up looking.
Yeah, the taking a risk on style is something I think, like, End of the Spider-Verse is incredible on its own. But obviously a humongous reason of success is because it looked like it looked. And it was a painstaking thing, and clearly it's still a painstaking thing because they're, again, like I said 15 years, but like no joke, the real delay is like, it's like another 2 years. So clearly it takes a while, but like it's a big reason why that worked. And it's a big part of K-pop Demon Hunters. Obviously the music has been a huge part of that as well.
The story
I don't know.
Was good. I like the story of that movie too.
I really enjoy that movie.
I do think there's a point to things changing though, because we know the dynamic duo movie that DC's making right now about like the Robins is like, they're using a studio called Swaybox Studios, and they say they're incorporating like puppetry, motion capture, animation, and the concept of like the videos that they have so far out. It truly is like a cliche animation like you've never seen it before. I've actually never seen anything like this. And I think things like that are going to continue to do well over what Kelly's saying, instead of everyone just trying to do the Spider-Verse thing, which I feel like even like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, people were like, oh yeah, great, they did example. Ninja Turtles, but they Spider-Versed it. People kind of just like reference it as like, oh yeah, they copied the Spider-Verse stuff. And that's great too. I like that movie, but
Pixar has to do Pixar. Like,
they Spider-Versed.
Yeah. Pixar should always be Pixar, and that's just how it is, and that's fine. I think Disney Animation Studios has an opportunity, though, to do something different. And so they say they're going to. That's a little ways away. That's still 3 years away, but I like hearing that.
I wouldn't be surprised as well with how well these anime movies are doing in the U.S. for one of these studios to start to pivot in that direction for more Japanese style.
Maybe.
Kids are eating like the Demon Slayer stuff up and Chainsaw Man stuff up. Those movies are making like $500 million.
The funny thing is Disney has embraced it in a very weird niche way with Star Wars. They've done these Star Wars Visions, which are in anime stuff. And it is like, it's fascinating. Like they've done it. They've just done it in a very small pocket of their normal stuff. Quick, before we wrap this up, is there any specific bird that you'd want to see? Like what is there a bird you want to see lead Zootopia 3?
Yeah, owls, Shakira. Of course. Owls.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Owl for Kelly. That would make sense.
Yeah. Need it.
I don't know. Are they gonna repeat the story? One of my big issues with this was I was like, I don't know if Judy hops and like, why are they racist towards reptiles? We learned in the first movie that like we could coexist with everyone, the predators, like someone's making them out to be like that. At the beginning of the movie when they're like, oh, a snake. Like I know she's turned like that as soon as she talks to him, but I was kind of just like, I don't know. Are they going to be racist towards birds?
I wouldn't
hate
if the birds are just really, really bad. Like if the birds are actually bad.
If they actually suck.
Yeah. Are we worried that we're going to cross over a little bit into like Rio territory? Another one of my very favorite animated movies, all about birds.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil the list later, but there's obviously, if you want to do owls, I mean, are you really going to risk infringing on the greatest owl movie ever made, directed by Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder, yeah.
Legend of the Guardians, the Owls of Ga'Hoole.
I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
You've never seen The Legend of the Guardians, the Owls of Ga'Hoole?
No. Really? It sounds like it's right in my alley.
It's Zack Snyder's 2010 animated movie about owls.
What the hell?
Specifically the Owls of Ga'Hoole, yeah.
Who do you think I should call? Should I call... what's his face for Zootopia? I can't think of it. Should I call Jared Bush or Zack Snyder for my Central Park Horse movie? I'm thinking Jared Bush. I'm watching Zootopia. We're already halfway there.
You have the Owl connection with Zack Snyder. He did Dawn of the Dead, 300, Watchmen, then Legend of the Guardians, The Owls of Ga'Hoole, then Sucker Punch, Man of Steel, and then he went to his real DC phase. It's the most random movie ever made by anyone ever.
Do you think also, this is a complete departure, and one more thing, sorry. Do you think that they used the original animation for Kronk and then just added some hair and turned it into a horse? To be the mayor.
Oh, man. Like it was pretty much
does
Kronk.
That. I didn't even dawn on me, but it does move.
Even
exactly
the same
like,
size.
Yeah.
He's the same shape, like everything. And voice.
I do wonder, did they do motion capture with the actors for their characters?
I don't think so.
It wouldn't shock me if Patrick Warburton just did the, he just knows that character and does the moves.
Yeah.
The voice maybe. Of Kronk, the yep. mayor, and it might be a couple other things. Voice of Soren at Disney.
Yes.
Joe Swanson. Come on now.
Yeah. He's like.
Obviously Joe.
That's your impression. Yeah.
It is my top impression.
Hit us with just a little bit of.
I can't do this. Just Warburton. Come on.
Give us a little Cusco's voice.
Maybe I'll throw it in later.
All right.
So we all like this. Zootopia, and we're going to talk about the box office in a minute because it is nuts, but it's worth its own discussion. It's like crazy.
Work hard and hydrate hard with Body Armor Flash IV. Whether you're working in extreme heat or powering through a long shift, Body Armor Flash IV delivers faster, longer-lasting hydration. With more than 2,000 milligrams of electrolytes, vitamins B and C, and zinc, coconut water, and no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes, Body Armor Flash IV keeps you performing at your best. Get Body Armor Flash IV at your local 7-Eleven.
Stranger Things Season 5, Volume 1. We'll talk about this next. Interesting group to discuss this. I will note, Robbie, your show, you'll hit the basement. People listen for a significantly larger breakdown of what's happened on the first four episodes and what's to come. You did a good recap as well. Kelly originally thought she hadn't watched season four and then went back and to go watch season four and realized she had watched the first four episodes of season four. But
yes.
The interesting thing about Stranger Things season four is it was such a cultural moment that everyone sort of knew at least a little bit of like what happened and like what was relevant. Obviously the Kate Bush song was like the big thing from that season. So Kelly's kind of on like the end of enjoys it, has watched much of it, but not as like, you know, into it maybe like Robbie is. And like I kind of got more into it again after loving it a couple years back because I did a rewatch this year. I don't know where you stand on it, Gooch. I liked quite a bit these first four episodes. I think the first one is kind of a table setter, but from there on out, especially the fourth one, I was very, very into it. So Gooch, what did you think of the first four episodes of Stranger Things?
I was about to say very good. I'll go with good. Good. Finished on a very strong note. I do think it started a bit rocky, and I think that just has to do with the large break that they went on and having to somewhat retcon a little bit of the end of season four. So it was a bit of, you know, putting band-aids on things quite literally and getting back to square
time
one.
Jump too. They very much needed a time jump.
I've seen people complain about, and we can get more into a discussion about like how old the actors look. That doesn't bother me. Maybe it's just because of my age and growing up with movie. I think all of the media related to like any kind of high school stuff was always 30-year-old actors playing high schoolers. So that
we can branch on that now. You can keep going. I'm gonna kind of go off on that. I think that the three of us, I think everyone should kind of get a thought on that because I do think that is in terms of complaints, that seems to be the big complaint. Which right, Gooch, it's like that's bizarre to me.
Yeah.
I think they did a great job of making them look somewhat like high school seniors. And it really didn't clock to me at all. It never took away from the viewing experience even a little bit. I don't know. I think that's a weird thing to get stuck on for people. I get that they're old, but like we have old actors play high schoolers.
Do we remember Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire?
Exactly.
Yeah. He was 50.
He's like clearly 30. Yeah.
That's driving me crazy.
Like, please.
Like there's critiques of Stranger Things, which look the third season in the mall. Like I think aesthetically looked amazing, but just never really hit like the other ones. It was kind of a weird season. It didn't work great. If your complaint about the new Stranger Things is like the stuff that goes on, the way it's written, characters, whatever, like I'm like, oh, that makes sense to me. That's fine. But for me, it's like to complain about the way the kids look because they're older and like you can't suspend disbelief. Like that almost feels like you're like, I don't know. That doesn't feel legit to me. Like I can, if it's like a, you know, right, if it's about the story, it's about the way it looks, blah, blah, blah. I can roll with all that subjective. I think that's just an asinine take. Does this bother either of you, Robbie or Kelly? Like, again, it doesn't bother me. Yeah, Lucas looks like he's 35 years old.
He's okay, a grown man. Like, he could shove me in a locker. Yeah.
Also, like, it's not like they look like, if they look like themselves from season one through season four, and then you jump to this, all right, maybe it's a little strange, but they don't. Yeah. They looked older in the last season, right?
So yeah, they don't look like that much different than they did in season four. Like season four, we were already saying, like, they were making the jokes. Oh, we're really going to watch, like, these adults say friends don't lie and stuff like that. And I do get that. Like, there was a couple people, Will this season, I thought looked way older. Lucas looked way older. Lucas, they did him dirty with that haircut, too. A couple people got, like, haircut upgrades. I feel like Will got an upgrade. He doesn't have as much of a bowl. Mike looks good with the haircut. Will, I'm like, what did they put on my guy's head? What the hell is that?
Hey, Erica Lucas's sister looks significantly older too. Like,
she looks a lot older. There's also the scene, like,
she's the only one where I was like, damn, her age jump was crazy. But I feel like I'm with everybody else. Like, it's the same situation as any TV show. And I don't even think they look that old. I think that they're all still pretty young.
Yeah, I don't either.
They're not that old.
I think it's also kind of cool. Like, it's kind of cool that in the final season, it's almost like Harry Potter.
It's
like
Harry Potter, exactly.
You watch the kids grow up, and by the end, it's a bit of a darker show. They've taken darker themes. The kids are adults. Like, I think it's kind of cool to have them grow up through the show, to watch these kids. Literally, because I did the rewatch as well last month. You watch season one, you're like, oh, they were like fucking toddlers on this show. Like, they were kids. And they were great actors back then, too. You watch it. Not all of them have kept those acting chops up. That was more distracting to me than the age thing. But, like, again, like, that doesn't really bother me a ton.
I don't understand the conversation around the age thing. I think that this happens, like you said, in every single thing ever. But Bob, I'm really glad you brought up Harry Potter, because I'm chomping at the bit to bring up Harry Potter, because my response to these first four episodes, which I did like, I hated season three. I thought the mall thing, visually, whatever, it's cool. But I thought the storyline was shit. I thought the acting was bad, whatever. I rewatched season four. I put it on last night and I was just watching it the whole night. And everything was good except for, like, the Russian storyline. I could absolutely not give a fuck less about that. But otherwise, everything was good. And then this season, it is like, not only is Will Byers have Daniel Radcliffe Deathly Hallows season one and two haircut, he has the same like cadence. He has that same, like, it's almost like he's wearing a Horcrux and he's kind of fucking with, you know, Vecna's in his head. Like, it's the parallels between are so similar. And now I'm seeing people talk about it online, so I do feel vindicated in that way. But I think that people should view it from that lens, because that's with all these kids have been through some shit. Nancy's been through some shit. Like, she's like borderline haggard. Like, I love her, she's beautiful, but she's really, like, hardened now, you know what I mean? Like, she's not fucking around. Her parents are in the hospital. Like, I think these are good steps for these actors, and I actually think their acting has gotten a lot better just because it's a more serious subject matter all of a sudden. We're talking about government. We've got government cover-ups happening. You know what I mean? Like, that's way. Yeah. I mean, I know it was kind of always like that, but now the kids are, like, involved with the government. You know, it's crazy.
Did you enjoy your rewatch of four as you're kind of going back?
The end.
Rewatch is probably the wrong word, because you didn't finish it, I guess.
I never finished it, but I liked the end. Yeah, the ending was good. I liked the Sadie Sink stuff, and I had seen the running up that hill scene. Like, I knew about all that, but the rest of the filler stuff. You know, if I had finished it before watching volume one, I think that maybe some of it would have hit harder, like, you know, Henry's house, et cetera. But now it makes sense to me.
And I'm glad you bring up, like, the filler stuff, because I do think this season still has those same problems this show has always had, where there's just one or two storylines that just you couldn't give a fuck about. And I think there is a couple of those going on, but for the most part, it's just more the same. This show is so consistent. I think that's, like, the biggest compliment I can give it, is that it is incredibly consistent. I know people don't love season three, but I still don't think it's a bad season of a television show. And the production value is just incredible.
Like, it is. The production value. I've seen some complaints about the beginning that, like, there's a good YouTube guy, his name, Heavy Spoilers. I'm going to watch him on YouTube.
I love him.
I think he's from Australia. I don't know where he's from. He's not from the
UK.
Yeah, UK. Right. He's from England. Yeah, he's from Britain. He said, and I actually thought it was a fair critique. He said he thought the first episode he felt like there's a, you could see there's a bigger budget, and like it kind of gets away from the smaller feel to so many of the earlier seasons where, yeah, maybe they didn't have like a crazy, crazy budget, but it kind of like was more intimate and looked that way. And then he said, like, as the season went on, it like as season gone on so far, he hasn't really thought that. So like, I think that's a fair critique, but for the most part, this show always looks, this show is also shot very well. Not to get too like film nerdy, but like the show always looks like the way they shoot this move, this show, incredible. All the transition criticizing that too, Jeff. Amazing.
People are yes. saying it's not, and I think people are just like reaching for things because mm-hmm. it's clearly shot very well. And I think the CGI for 99% of it looks great. I think the Demogorgon's up close. They're not afraid to show them in the light now. It's like clear that they're putting the budget to good use, and clear that they probably give the VFX artists a ton of time. There's been a ton of time since they wrapped shooting this, so they've been working on it for probably over a year.
Yeah, they're very good. So how do you feel about it, Robbie? Are you pleased with?
Oh yeah,
so far.
I totally agree. I think episode one, you're like getting your feet back on. You kind of expect more of a post apocalyptic Hawkins, and you don't get that. So it's like you adjust your brain to like, all right, I guess they figured out the upside down thing. They put the big strip over it. But after that, yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great. Like every single episode had me hooked with something. I've seen some people giving it weapons comparisons here and there. And I do see like comparisons you could draw where maybe the Duffers saw weapons and they were like, oh man, we were about to do something kind of similar with that. But yeah, I mean, the way they end four was so good. They're so good at cliffhangers. They split up season four into two volumes, and volume one of that ended on the awesome Vecna reveal, basically. And everyone was like, oh my God, I can't wait for volume two. That's kind of what this did for me, where like, I can't believe we have to wait a month for volume two. I'm stoked. I'm ready to see the finale in theaters when they put it in theaters. I'm all the way back in on Stranger Things. And after watching the whole series leading up to this, it all feels like pretty earned. It feels like even the bigger stuff should be bigger. It feels like it should have that finale scale. So I'm really, really stoked with what we got so far.
Yep. I'm right there as well. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this. It is... There's two things with the way they did the new, or kind of they reshaped where we are, right? Like you thought it would might have been post-apocalyptic. I am glad they went this way, and I'm also surprised they made it work. Like the explanation didn't really feel wonky, right? Like the military comes in, they patch it up. That might be a little silly, right? It's a big long open, but like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like I had no issues buying into that. I'm like, all right, that makes sense. Like, yeah, they made a good joke about it, right? Like people are sledding on it, like the big metal plates to fill the cracks. I think they did a really nice job at like resetting things. And that's kind of the thing that I like respect the most, is they didn't fall into some Avengers like Endgame trap to make this whole season a big battle, right? Which that's probably even a bad comparison, because Endgame does a great job
at being
emotional and like doing things. But like my point is, like they didn't make it just like the entire, I guess my worry, I'll rephrase, my worry with this new Stranger Things season was more that it would be the Endgame battle, the Avengers Endgame battle for 8 episodes. That's basically what I thought it was going to be. And I'm glad they didn't do that, right? Like you said, Goots, like it's super consistent. They yes, like, is there going to be a storyline or two where you're like, I don't care, this is goofy, or like, whatever, what does it matter? But that's the show. And they've never broken away from that, even in, like, the season that maybe not as good, and then the seasons, like, last one, which are great. So, yeah, I thought it was great. The ending is awesome. We'll spoil it here going forward. But to save – again, the other thing, too, is, like, to save Vecna for 4 episodes, like, good on them, right? Like, 'cause they could have very well fallen into that trap and put him in the first episode. And then having it where it's like, all right, you have Henry, you have this a different version of him. You add some depth and lore to a character, which kind of burst out of nowhere, who they've retconned a little as to being the character from the beginning. Like he really wasn't. He was, but he wasn't, right? I think they've
it's
gone back.
It's a great retcon.
They've gone back and edited in like the clock sound effect of the early seasons. They've like admitted
that. I think
that
they have.
They have.
Wow.
Which is not a crazy stretch, because they've also been lucky where it's pretty, even if they didn't do that, it is believable. You're like, oh yeah, Vecna's been there since the beginning. But I thought like the same for the end, and then have him be ruthless. I mean, some brutal kills. Like they're not holding back anything. And even the Demogorgon scene.
And eyeballs?
Like, yeah, that was
that
crazy.
That was nuts.
I hated that.
Even,
that was gross.
Even the Demogorgon scene with the parents was like, I was like, oh shit, this is fucked. This is wild.
That was a really good scene. Shout out to Mrs. Wheeler. Mrs. Wheeler. What an acting job by her. Holding Holly the wine in the
tub. Mom. Wow. Ultimate wine mom. Oh my God. Time. Breaking the Chardonnay.
And she's doing all that.
People are pissed about that because they're like, we literally see later on in the season, it takes like 30 guys with machine guns to try to kill one and they can't. But she like hits it with the wine bottle. I don't care about that stuff. The main characters are stronger. I don't care.
Exactly. Yep.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Power scaling demogorgons. Who cares?
Who cares? And it's one. It's one.
We have not shockingly reached that point with people in this show where I think people are over critiquing it. Like, I just think way too much. Like, this is supposed to be, there is supposed to be an element. Look, like, you have Steve comparing, like, the going into the Upside Down to old discontinued like chocolate peanut butter bars in the 80s. Like it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be goofy. And there's just critiques which make, I'm like, it's like, there's just this, there's contrarians who are like salivating about this show where you're like, you're just critiquing things at this point. It's just, yeah.
It reminds me of the classic Harrison Ford quote when Mark Hamill came to him on A New Hope and he's like, I think my hair should be wet. Cause in the last scene we were in the trash compactor. He said, kid, it ain't that kind of movie. If they're worried about that, we got much bigger issues. It's like, it ain't that kind of movie. When you're talking about wine bottle shouldn't hurt it because a bullet, it ain't that kind of show. Just enjoy.
Karen Wheeler's actress, Cara Buono, her husband is the inventor. I found this out last season very randomly. Is the inventor of the water they sell at Starbucks, Ethos Water. She's the inventor of that. He created that company. Yeah. That's very, very strange. Like, that is so small random. Fun fact.
I don't know why. I thought you were going to say he was the inventor of the scrub daddy. That's the first thing that came to mind for me.
What a legend, right?
Imagine what that was. Can I say that I'm interested and impressed with how quickly they seem to have gotten the military up and running just in the Upside Down. It's a fully functional space.
Full base.
That they're, they're just coming in and out of there. People are working there. Like, are they living there? Like, I want to know more about what they're turning the Upside Down into, government aside. Like, I just feel like it's, like, anybody can go there, it seems.
Perfect Linda Hamilton role, by the way. Like, just perfectly cast for that
Linda
role.
Hamilton.
Big time.
Yep. You really couldn't get anyone else for that role. Which, also, they're great at casting. The kid who plays Derek, they're also, they are very good with this show at writing and creating kid characters. Like they're as good as probably anyone out there in terms of creating this character because they always hit. Like they're like no matter what type of character, whether it's a bully or a small side character, like they get it as much as anyone. So the first four episodes is the crawl is 1 hour and 8 minutes. The vanishing of Holly Wheeler now, who's become a huge character.
Yeah.
Obviously, she aged up quite a bit. Pretty good actress as well. The Turnbow Trap, and then Sorcerer. You get back Sadie Sink's character at one point. That I was legitimately shocked by that. I did not expect that.
I thought it was Joseph Quinn.
Yeah, I thought she was going to be in the coma for like almost the entire thing. So I was like pretty surprised, like till like kind of the end. And then obviously the Sorcerer, the last episode, which I think was pretty clearly the best of the four, which they were gearing up to, like they knew it too. And that ending was I'll tell you what, there's times where I'm not a big fan of that Will character, but I was like, oh, this is fucking sick. This is pretty. And they did a good job teasing it too. Every time you had those visions, right? Like, again, that's another thing where I give them a lot of credit. Yes, obviously they've retconned something. They've gone back and retroactively, but like who doesn't, right? Like fucking look, George Lucas had Luke and Leia make out in Empire Strikes Back. So it's like, you know, whatever.
Brother and sister. Yeah.
But they, like, if he had his powers randomly at the end of the episode, I'd believe it, obviously. But they did a very good job building up to that moment when it still hit like this big, like, oh, fuck. I don't know. Look, you have four people who seem to like it, but it is funny because there are some people who are hating on it. And the reasons I think are just, I never want to be critical of somebody critiquing something that's like, quote unquote, art, movies, TV. But I think a lot of the critiques are really fucking stupid. I think they're
like the fun thing to hate on. Yeah. Yeah.
It is. It's which I understood. Do you guys agree with this? I understood that going into season 4, right? Because there's a huge gap. Season 3 was not as well received. They're like, oh, God, Stranger Things again. But then it was good.
It was so good. Yeah.
Humongous cultural moment. And then it's like, okay, so we did this 3 years ago. Why are we doing this again? Like, they came back and they made something good. Why are we? It's like, also the, like the fake runtime thing got people going. People are like, oh, they're all going to be 3 hours. Well, they're not.
Yeah. I would add that like the public perception of some of the stars in this show has declined quite a bit. I mean, Millie Bobby Brown, every time she speaks to the media, she speaks with such contempt for her craft. it's quite the turnoff for me. I'll be honest, but like she is built for this role. Like this role is, there's a reason why it propelled her.
Millie Bobby Bon Jovi, but that's okay.
I know her name's not even Bobby. I found out it's Bonnie. What the hell?
She's a liar.
Professionally, she's Millie Bobby Brown. But yeah, and she's been in a recent interview. She's been talking about it because she I don't, for those who don't know, she did marry Bon Jovi's kid.
Yeah. I mean, she owns this role. I don't like her in a lot of other things, but she really does own this role. And I think all the kids in the show do. Like they're not the best actors, but these are characters that are inseparable from them. It's been a fun ride.
They're also very good at nailing the moment in episodes, like the shit moment. They had two kind of oh shit moments, obviously the Will thing, but also her popping up and in the Upside Down when Hopper shot out, which that was a great scene as well, when Hopper shot those military guys and her popping up and that turn, it was shot well. Yeah, they
like the Undertaker. So
I'm assuming there's still four episodes left. There's gonna be some pretty good oh shit moments going forward. For those out there who haven't watched it or like, I don't know, it's like, I don't know, it's like, have fun with it. I don't know. It's like, it's not that.
It's like that's you can really recommend it to anyone too. Like you really don't need to be a crazy sci-fi person. You don't need to love the 80s nostalgia. Like this was a show that I sat down and watched season one when it first came out. And my mom, by the end of it, was like sitting down next to me wanting to see the conclusion. She hates sci-fi stuff. It's like just a very good show. It's very fun to watch for anyone.
I would say this latest, you know, season 5, volume 1, I was getting Multiverse of Madness vibes a little bit because we've got like the memories aspect of it. And I think that mm-hmm. is something I want to know more about. And I also think, first of all, major shouts to the child actress who plays Holly Wheeler. I think that she is really good. I think her facial acting is incredible. I think that she's like, I don't know. I thought I was really captivated by her, and her and Sadie Sink together, I thought was a really good pair. But I think another piece of it, there are nods to other, like, you know, other stories within when it comes to Holly, especially I think because she's a kid, like when she's stuck in Henry's house and she's wearing a literal Alice in Wonderland dress, like she puts that on and she's doing she's following something through the woods. Like I think that there are these parallels of like you're stuck in this dream world, and then she runs into Mad Max, Mad Hatter. People are talking about that online too. Yeah. So it's like I think that these lines are drawn, and I love that. I love that there's that element of going through Vecna's memories, and I think that ultimately, you know, we still tie in more Harry Potter stuff, Voldemort. Are we going to eventually have to kill all these Vecna variants that are being created to kill him? Like that's where I'm at. Like I'm very focused on like the resolution.
So bring up Marvel stuff. I don't want to go too far into theories here. Check out Robbie's podcast. We're gonna go deep into it. But I there's been some people, another one, heavy spoilers mentioned it. I've seen this a lot, that people think Will might be like Loki with the multiverse, where Will has to go live in the Upside Down and keep everything together and be like good Vecna. I could see that. I like, I don't know.
He's Will the Wise in the end. Will being
see you later. I'm out.
No, he's got to end up with Mike.
Yeah, what's with that? Have you seen that whole, that Mike and Will are like going to be a
couple? That's got to be the end game. It's got to be the end
game. Well, Will definitely likes Mike, but Mike, I think Mike still likes 11.
I think so too.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone get the urge to watch the Wrinkle in Time live action Disney movie after all the Wrinkle in Time?
Kind of, yeah, a little bit.
I did not. I didn't like that book when I read it, so I always had like a bad taste in my mouth from it because I just didn't like the teacher that made us read it in seventh grade.
Fair.
Ava DuVernay special. All right, so that is
one more thing before we move on. The bullies in this show continue to be the most comically
as
80s over
as
the,
it gets. Yeah.
The worst. Just,
like, I get that it's like a love letter to the 80s, but they are so over the top mean. They are so
definitely
mean.
With intent, though, right? Like, I think they do a good job making you just despise them. Mm-hmm. The last bully got ripped in half. literally ripped in half.
Jason. Yeah.
Yeah. That was rough though. It was rough watching those kids beat up what's his face on top of the grave. It's like Dustin.
Dustin, I know.
Why isn't he telling them? Am I stupid for missing why he's not telling them?
Like, I don't know. I don't love angsty Dustin this season because I love Dustin. And I'm like, snap out of it, Dustin. Stop being a dick to all your friends.
Yeah, so the one character that got brought back, I do want to know, is the – I almost forgot about it – is 10?
Yeah. Oh, no, 8.
8. 8. 8. Yeah. 8 from – it was the backdoor pilot episode from season 2 where she – 11 goes to Chicago and it's like all punk. And people hate that episode. But they never really tied that up together. And I think people have always mentioned that. And it's obviously a huge part. And she is the one locked behind the door in the last episode in Sorcerer where they thought they were going to find Vecna. Hopper did. I was convinced Hopper's about to die, by the way, in that episode.
But they get us every season with Hopper. Yeah. They're starting to make me mad because every season they get me. He probably is, but he goes every season. He writes the note.
Yeah,
he reads and I'm crying with the note. And then he's in Russia. Hopper. Have you guys seen the dice theory, though? The dice theory, I think. A dice theory. Clem blogged this before season 5 came back. The dice theory goes back to season 4, episode 1, when Vecna's introduced in the Dungeons & Dragons game. And Eddie's like, oh, you got to roll a perfect 20 to defeat Vecna. So the dice theory before season 5 came back was that 8 needs to return because it'll be 11 plus 8 plus the power of 1. Now Will has harnessed the power of 1 and we brought back 8. I think the dice theory might be spot on. It might be those 3 to defeat Vecna.
That sounds.
I kind of like that. That I can.
Why
I
else
can
is eight
see
there?
That.
Like you know, at this point,
that's what I mean.
Eight, you know what I mean?
I like that.
Based on that,
I do think the game is going to play heavily into it. I think
so. Because it did in season 4. A lot of season 4 lined up with how they were playing Dungeons and Dragons.
I also thought I'm going to reference the same exact video. Go watch it. Heavy spoilers. He did a good hour long breakdown of the season, but he mentioned too they made a very pointed shot to show that Will's backpack got caught in the tree in the Upside Down. And that's kind of like a hint of like. You know, maybe there's stuff in that backpack. There's this character stuff from Dungeons and Dragons. Like maybe there's something there. So,
yeah. Can I say something about David Harbour? I remembered just now. So I'm not really a Hopper guy because I think that Hopper as a character is always stuck in like the most macho scenario that he has to like fight his way out of. Like he had dynamite strapped to his chest this entire first 4 episodes and we didn't know until the last second. Like he's just so like over the top masculine in a way that is annoying to me. And so I've never really like, I get it, but I don't like love him. And now with like the Lily Allen, I'm a Lily Allen stan and I love her new album, West End Girl. And with all that drama with David Harbour, I'm looking at him different and I can't lie. And every time he does something that's like supposed to be heartwarming or heroic or whatever, I like roll my eyes. I'm like, oh, this motherfucker. So I wonder if other people are feeling the same, but yeah, I'm just kind of like rolling my eyes at everything he does.
Netflix did a good PR job with them at those red carpets, though, that's for sure.
They really did. Yeah, they did. We're all friends.
All right. This episode of Project Big Screen is brought to you in part by Game Time, the best place to buy tickets for anything sports, comedy, Broadway, music, and more. So many amazing concerts coming up this winter. A big one with the holiday season rolling around is Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I know that. I just pulled it up here on the old Game Time app. Any locations you got, New Hampshire, California, Massachusetts, looking at Anaheim, California, Worcester, Phoenix, Arizona, Uncasville, Connecticut. You can go all over the place to find the Trans-Siberian Orchestra and get fantastic deals. Not just fantastic deals, the best deals around. Also, fees always included. Like, for example, if you are in Massachusetts, you want to go see them, Worcester, $70, fantastic. Last-minute tickets, you can get them a couple weeks ahead of time. And I said earlier, all fees included, that's maybe the best part. Because all these other websites you go to, you get the tickets, you get them ready to go, you go to checkout, all of a sudden it's like ballooning by $50, $60, $70. But no, Game Time tells you right then and there. The Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets as well. You don't got to worry about any of that. Take the guesswork out of buying concert tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app. Create an account and use code PROJECT, PROJECT, for $20 off your first purchase. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Download the Game Time app today.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into some non-review stuff, some movie news, trailers. There's the movie How to Make a Killing from John Patton Ford, his second movie. He first directed Emily the Criminal with Aubrey Plaza, a good movie that came out a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And like kind of a surprise out of nowhere. And now doing How to Make a Killing. Michael and where's my synopsis here? Hold on. Before I find my synopsis, I'll tell you who's in the movie. Glenn Powell, Margaret Qualley. They're in the movie. Good trailer. People seem to like it. There's a big note on this movie, which does kind of worry me. It is coming out in
last week of February. Right?
Yeah, so it's not a great release date.
Go back to Everything Everywhere All at Once, though. Who knows?
That's true. What do we think about this trailer for How to Make a Killing?
I think it looks awesome.
Yeah, I was going to say, this looks great. Great, great trailer.
I saw a comment on the trailer where they said this looks more like an Edgar Wright movie than The Running Man did. And I kind of agree. This looks like an Edgar Wright movie.
Official synopsis is when she passes away, impoverished and alone, Beckett decides to make good on the plot follows Beckett Redfellow, the son of Mary, and heiress to the vast Redfellow estate, but who was disowned by the family when Beckett was born. When she passes away, impoverished and alone, Beckett decides to make good on her belief that he is destined for greatness, no matter how evil he might need to be to achieve it. Yeah, and also I think there's a big question here is obviously word of mouth on Running Man wasn't great. I liked Running Man, but some people didn't love Running Man. Is, you know, we're going to start to see, like, can Glenn Powell move money to the box office? And I'm not fully convinced of that yet, despite being someone who does really enjoy Glenn Powell. But this is going to be another kind of like, all right, let's see, like, what can he do? What can he bring in? Which I'm not sure the answer is on that yet.
I'm curious about how Margaret Qualley is going to be. I'm a big Margaret Qualley fan, but I didn't love the movie that just came out with her and
Honey
Aubrey
Don't.
Plaza.
Honey Don't.
And I wanted to have that movie. It had all of the makings of like being a movie of mine that I would really like, but I didn't love it. And I feel like Margaret's like voice, her character is kind of a similar vibe or something as like that like detective or private eye, whatever, from Honey Don't. So I'm curious to see if that will be distracting.
What they need to do, because it worked on Anyone But You, is they need to have Margaret make it seem like she's cheating on her husband with Glenn Powell the entire time to get that box office.
Yes. Exactly.
Here's my question. Right. Do we think Glenn Powell's going to have to put a couple more rom-coms under the belt?
I think so. I think that is a lost art. Yeah. So many stars got built through the 90s and 2000s.
McConaughey.
Back of rom-com.
Yeah. I was thinking and McConaughey. Yeah, go more.
That's
the
his guy. That's
direction.
His fellow Austin, Texas native guy. Like, I think he needs to have some more rom-coms under the belt. I think he's a star. He's a big name, but I think build it up a little more.
He's so funny. Chad Powers, he's so funny, and like he has the comedic chops.
Totally.
It doesn't necessarily need to be rom-coms, but you need to speak to the female audience at some point in your career. And I think that's a big thing that has allowed Chalamet to just ascend straight to the top, is that he started with Call Me By Your Name, which obviously not like directly to female audiences, but definitely more than others. And Bones and All, Little Women. He has a massive, massive fan base that other actors that seem to just completely ignore. And I think Glenn Powell could really benefit from, and a lot of the young stars right now could really benefit from that.
Yeah, we need to remember that he's also a sweetie pie. Like I want to know that. Like we know he can do action. We know he can be Tom Cruise. He can be Chad Powers. He can be the guy in Twisters. Like he can do whatever he wants. But I need to see him be a lover boy a little bit more.
Set it up too. What a great movie.
A couple more Linklater movies.
Oh,
maybe.
So good.
Zoe Deutsch, you love her, right, Jeff?
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those two. I think that might be neat. We'll see. And I'm also curious if he does like really, really big budget action again, like Top Gun. So we'll see. This is for nobody. This next trailer, The Strangers Chapter 3. I just want to mention it because
I saw you sent
sucks.
That. I was like, who's
this series?
Sucks.
Very
confused.
What's going on here? Yeah.
what a terrible, crappy. So the first, The Strangers, is fine. I think it's a solid horror movie. The second one, Prey After Dark, I think, or Prey at Night. Not quite as good. Then they did these three movies, and it's going to go down as probably the worst, like pound for pound, because this is it's real, it's real money made by a real studio. the worst horror trilogy ever made. Like, it's they're that wow. bad. Stranger Chapter 1 was atrocious.
Chapter 2 was
just as bad. Oh,
they all came out this year, right? Or maybe last year?
Last year, no, they're 3 years in a row. So last year was one, this year was two. This next one, there's a smaller gap, and it's going to come out in February. I mean, just enough with these. What a whiff. Also, maybe stop committing to doing – like Kevin Costner ruined his life by committing to making five Horizon movies. Maybe stop committing to doing three of these. Maybe just do one.
See how it goes. Yeah. What if after chapter one, people were like, this sucks. Maybe you could have saved yourself some time and money. Don't make two and three.
Also, Jeff, you said worst horror franchise ever. I'd like to remind you that the Terrifier franchise does exist.
Oh, I hate
people
those.
Love them,
I
though.
Hate those movies. People I know love people them, love them. But do. It's gore porn.
Sickos love them. You're a sicko
sickos.
If you love it.
Yeah.
That's that's what I want to note on that. Anyway, so box office. We mentioned we're talking about box office. So the box office was crazy for Zootopia 2. Did $156 million domestically, second best Thanksgiving opening ever behind Moana 2, which did like $70 million more, by the way. I forgot how big Moana 2 was. But the difference being Zootopia 2, significantly bigger international opening. $400 million overseas, $556 million worldwide opening, the fourth biggest weekend ever for a movie. Ever behind Endgame, Infinity War, and Spider-Man No Way Home. It's the biggest non-Marvel opening ever for a movie. That's how big it is in Asia. It did really well here. It's like second best Thanksgiving ever, but it's so big overseas and so big. It's the biggest single day box office ever for a movie in China. That's crazy.
Wow.
And sadly enough, I can't steal this. Kirk calls him the movie hater, Chris Klemmer. Movie hater and box office skeptic. Chris Klemmer's not on here to eat his crow about the dying box office. Because Wicked, $93 million weekend. And yes, while Netflix is, though at the same time, technically Rian Johnson did sign the deal with Netflix, they kind of didn't put Knives Out 2 in as many theaters, or 3 in as many theaters as you would have liked. I went to Knives Out yesterday, completely sold out. No seats.
Same. My place was sold out.
Crazy. Zootopia. So box office, very good 2 weeks for the box office, which is nicely. But Zootopia, holy shit. I couldn't believe that. Fourth biggest
I thought
ever.
It was discussing fish. And I know Zootopia is big, but I was like, it didn't beat Endgame in a day, right? Like, there's no way. Discussing film, not discussing fish. Yeah. Crazy.
Unbelievable. Wow. They sell the big popsicles in one of the Disney parks at the Zootopia land.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know it's like
have you had them?
Like the popsicles? Popsicle.
They're like this big. If you're watching
from the elephant store. They look so good. Honestly, that's one of those like movie foods that I always think of, like, oh, that looks friggin' good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're never gonna make an original animated movie ever again. Like what? Like I sit here and I say like they need to, and I beg them to, but like
$7 million
like for Zootopia too. And Zootopia, the first one, I like it. But I don't think it has like the fanfare to warrant that. That's insane.
I don't know. I feel like when I heard, I didn't really realize Zootopia 2 was coming out until kind of recently. And I said, oh, that's going to go fucking crazy. Everyone went nuts for Zootopia the first time. Like I have such vivid memories of like, I was a full ass adult. And all my friends were like, oh my God, Zootopia. Like it was really, really, really.
Well, they were making like Breaking Bad references and it was cop stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, yeah.
Well, here's my thing though is, like, yeah, Zootopia Land is very cool, and Shanghai Disney looks awesome.
we should all
here's go. My thing though. Like, it was 10. Like, you're right, Gooch, but I do think like I hope they look at the blueprint for this a little bit. Like, it was 10 years. Like, it's a movie that kind of just continued to be a thing that people like. They, you know, they do a present of the theme. Like, I have no problem with the sequels, right? Like, Incredibles 2. How long was that gap? Like, that's fine, but like, mix in the originals in between and then go make your trillions of dollars, you know, waiting, you know, X amount of time to build up more of a base. The, I don't know. You're probably right. It's the cynical
Shakira.
Take is,
it's Shakira. More movies back, need Shakira. Yeah.
Shakira. She's like ripping off her own song, right? That's the bit.
Yeah. That I didn't need in Zootopia too. All due respect to Shakira. I know they,
I thought it was
going to
be, the song from the first movie. That was like,
I love Shakira,
song
but she's singing her like World Cup song, right?
Yes. It sounds like a World Cup song. Yes.
Yeah,
I just like that they gave the gazelle a big fatty.
Big
yeah. Of course I did. Of course I did.
All right, so big Robbie versus Robbie thing here. We have one Robbie's a James Cameron hater. The other Robbie is a James Cameron simp, is probably the best way to put it. He did have an interesting thought. So obviously Avatar 3 is coming out very soon. I saw box office projections for that are a little ahead of the first, but behind the second, which makes sense. Also, the fascinating thing about obviously the first Avatar is that it opened to only like $70 million, I think, and then it obviously became the highest grossing movie of all time. That's a movie that people love overseas. He said that if 3 doesn't justify 4 and 5, he will walk away. Because obviously it costs an ass load of money to make these movies, like just absurd. You'll probably never get like the full amount. And he said if it doesn't justify it and Bob Iger says stop, he'll stop. And he only has one little story thread that to wrap up through a book. I assume Robbie Fox is rooting for that. And Gooch, you're obviously not. But we'll see. Like how do we think Avatar 3 is going to go?
I mean, I think it's going to be a masterpiece. Now, if it makes – will it make the money it needs to? Because James Cameron, perfect quote, he said – this one cost a fuck ton money to make, and it's going to need to make 2 fuck tons to be yeah. profitable. Because, the last tour was the box office discussion going in was crazy. I remember people were like, it needs to make $4 billion to be profitable by the time the movie was releasing. And I think the Zootopia stuff makes it really interesting in terms of like the legs on this movie, because that's always been the story with James Cameron is that while maybe not the biggest openings, the legs are always just insane, like the Titanic legs, the Avatar legs. And there isn't much behind it, but if Zootopia creeps in and starts chipping away at what would have been Avatar's, like, feasting time, that could chop away at this franchise. It could put an end to it. Zootopia ends the Avatar franchise. And if it does, I'm okay with that because James Cameron always has great ideas. Whatever he decides to do, I don't think he's going to quit making movies anytime soon. He's like 75. He looks like he's like 55 and has the energy of a 30-year-old man. I don't think he's stopping anytime soon. He's got that Hiroshima movie coming up. That's going to be great. So if this is the end of the franchise, so be it. I would love to watch like 10 more of these movies. I know, Robbie, you want this to die, but James Cameron, I trust.
I don't even know if I want it to die. I'm not even rooting against it because I'm like, I want him to fail. I want to see James Cameron make movies like the Hiroshima movie. I want to see him do something else because it's been since Titanic, since we've seen him do something other than Avatar, which is kind of crazy to me. Give someone else the Avatar franchise. I know he probably would never do that. Yeah. But like, I don't even care if those movies keep coming out. I just feel like James Cameron's wasting and I know this is what he wants to do. It's not like he's wasting his life, but I'm like, he could have made 10 True Lies and Titanics and whatever in the time that it took him to make a couple Avatar movies. I just want to see him do other stuff. And I'm a James Cameron hater because I feel like he talks about comic book movies like they're so below him. And I kind of feel like Avatar movies are comic book movies with way better CGI. But I also love Terminator 2. I love a lot of the stuff that James Cameron did outside of the Avatar. The Avatar, I just think it's fine. I'm like, the second movie I didn't really like. I thought that was way too long. And I will not be seeing the third in theaters. I'll probably buy a ticket, go see the Doomsday trailer on the big screen.
Doomsday trailer probably attached. Yep.
Yeah, then I'm
You got to go see the audit. You got to go see the Christopher Nolan prologue.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I'll beat traffic. Yeah.
Do you give any shits about Avatar?
Actually, when the first movie came out, I hated it. I hated the idea of it because everybody was so obsessed with it when stopped talking about it. And then I saw it and I was obsessed with it. So I really liked the first one. The second one I thought was good. I haven't seen it in a long time. I kind of forget the storyline, but you know, I know the vibe. But I'm wondering if that James Cameron quote, like, is that him being, you know, is he setting people up for potential disappointment, or is he kind of like throwing his balls on the table and being like, if this movie's not worth it, I quit, which it sounds to me like he really thinks it's worth the wait. But is he like that? Like, I feel Titanic James Cameron. I don't really know. I don't really follow him past that.
He's a big put his balls on the table guy.
Then it kind of sounds like he's like, if this isn't fucking worth it, I'll go write a book for everybody that wants to hear about it. Like, this sounds to me like he's very confident that it is going to be worth it.
I enjoyed the last one. I don't love the first one. The first one's whatever. The first one is in one ear, out the other to me. I think it's unbelievable the way it looks. I think it was amazing.
I like how it looks.
Yeah. I think the second one was a more interesting story. And more enjoyable. I think probably large for that was like less humans for me. I liked being lost in that world. We'll see if this one holds up to that. I mean, we'll see. I enjoyed the last one, so I do hope this next one's good. Will it make that same money? It's funny because now the assumption is yes, because of the last one. But it'd be fascinating.
I assume yes.
If it didn't.
Yeah.
It'd be fascinating if it just didn't catch.
I'm not just saying it to be a hater. I just don't know any single person in my life that's like, other than Gooch and Ken Jack, who are like, I can't wait for the new Avatar. Nobody says that. That in my life.
Yes, I would agree. I also do not know anyone outside of Ken Jack and Gooch.
Although that quote by James Cameron just now, like that kind of makes me want to go see it in the movie theater. Like I'm kind of like, I got to see what this is all about. Like if he keeps talking like that, telling me don't bother, then I'm going to be interested.
Like it's going to be the same discussion all over again, blah, blah, blah. Like whatever. It doesn't have the domestic impact that is the big thing. I mean, like it's like, it is funny. It's like the answer to the question every time is they're like, how does it do it? How does it do it? Well, just because internationally it's a huge movie. Like that is the answer. It's like, it's not overly complicated. There's not some secrets. Like it catches on over there.
China, as Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
China.
It catches on. Which my one thing with him, and this is not a James Cameron only thing. It's like, I say the same thing about Tarantino. It's like Tarantino quit doing fucking Fortnite red carpets. Like let's make a movie. I want to see James Cameron do something else though.
Yeah.
So I do want to see him do something else. Like, I would say want that.
Over the past few years, more than any other time in the past two decades, it does sound like he is somewhat growing tired of the Avatar stuff. Like it sounds like he's ready to move on. More than, I don't know if that's true, but it sounds that way, at least in interviews.
He started developing
the first one in like 94.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously, there's a light at the end of the tunnel now, right? They're coming out at a quicker rate.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's clearly like an end goal here, which is good.
Do you think that the people who enjoy it are watching it are going to be less because when it first came out, the first one, I know like, you know, I think about like my dad and like boomers who thought it was just like one big fuck you to like anti-environmental, you know, I feel like there's that political aspect to it. Do you think that it kind of lost fanfare because of that? And now, you know, thinking about the US right now, like people aren't caring about global warming as much. So like, what's the deal? Do you think?
It's kind of gone away from that a little bit. I do think Giovanni Ribisi's character is in this next one. Is that true, Gooch? Do you know that?
I don't know.
Because he was kind of the main cog in that system with like farming, you know, whatever.
The cinematographer?
The what?
The cinematographer?
The actor Giovanni Ribisi.
But he was a cinematographer.
Oh, he is, right.
Strange Darling, right?
He made the.
So I think he's in this one. Well, so maybe they're going to go back to that whole. I don't know. We'll see.
We got Una Chaplin.
She's gonna tickets.
She's going to be sleeping with Miles Quaritch.
Fast X. Does anyone remember the last Fast and Furious movie?
Nobody showed up in a
submarine.
So at the end of that movie, there was a humongous plane crash, and Han, Roman, Tej, and Ramsey's characters all died. They're all on the plane, according to the cliffhanger. That's what's implied. So there's another Fast and Furious movie coming out. It's probably the last one, so they say. They scaled the budget back significantly because these last couple did not hit like they thought they would. There's also been internal issues with, you know, The Rock and Vin Diesel and all this shit. And I normally wouldn't even bring this up, but I just think it's so funny. They talked about the crazy potential twist. It says a key source of discord centered around the script and its ending for Fast 10. While a cliffhanger was always part of Fast 10's plan, several drafts of the screenplay also hinged on a jaw-dropping twist in which Dante, played by Jason Momoa, a new big bad they introduced in the last one, was revealed to be the true father of little Brian, Vin Diesel's character, Dom Toretto's child. That was going to be the big reveal, is that he, like, this isn't actually your, you know, this kid that you named after your friend who is obviously not dead, but in real life is dead. And like, it's actually his son. I don't know what they're going to do with this franchise because they had it so big, space, people are dying all over the place. And now it's like going to be back to street level. I hope it's the worst thing ever made. Like, I really do. Like, I really hope it's the worst movie ever made, Fast 11.
I had a conversation with my dad over the weekend. We love the Fast movies in my house. And my dad and I are probably the only two people on earth who enjoyed Fast 3, Tokyo Drift. And so if we get another, just a Tokyo Drift style movie, I'm going to be happy. I'm okay with that because I like
people,
that.
People like the early ones though because of the nostalgia, which I get. I get it. I do get it.
Paul Walker's dead though. Paul Walker's dead. It'll never be the same. And I appreciate that they've tried really hard to keep this going, but it's like.
There's pretty heavy rumors that you're going to see Paul Walker's face on that screen in the last
one. Oh, sure.
That they're going to use the brothers because the family seemed to be okay with it. The brothers kind of did it. Well, it made sense.
The brother helped. He was in that. He was in that final scene, like as a body that they could put his face on.
Yes.
So his brother's involved, but.
My argument on that one, though, is that he just died. And like they had
the movie, right?
And they had to finish. He's in most of the movie. Like I totally get that. I think that's one of the best examples of like that type of thing not being gross. Like I totally get it. The family wanted it. It was a nice tribute. To bring him back and reanimate him. That's a little that's getting a little.
I don't think I like that. That reminds me of like those when people like AI images of their dead family members like hugging each other in photos and stuff. I hate that.
Last bit of news before we get to kind of what people have been watching and stuff like that. Actually, we have two more things, but one of them is Macaulay Culkin gave out a pitch for another Home Alone movie, which reminder, they came out with a movie called, I think it was Home Sweet Home Alone. Is that what they called it? On Disney Plus. Horrendous movie a couple years ago. And there's also others. There's Home Alone 3, which is my favorite thing of all time. It's where they have Korean terrorists instead of the wet bandits.
Roger Ebert's favorite Home Alone. That one was.
That's right. Yep. 4 and 5 they have as well. He said, I'm either a widower or a divorcee. I'm raising a kid and all that stuff. I'm working really hard and not really paying enough attention. And the kid is kind of getting miffed at me. And then I get locked out of the house and he sets the traps on me. I kind of fucking hate that idea. I think that kind
of sucks. It needs to be fleshed out, but I don't hate it. I like at least that you just rattled off a bunch of Home Alone sequels. Pretty much all of them, they retell the same story of burglars are trying to get in, kid sets booby traps. I kind of like that he put enough thought into it where he was like, how can we make the booby traps not the exact same thing as the first? I still like the like rated R Home Alone idea where it's like the wet bandits get out of prison and one more time are like, we're going to kill that fucking kid. Like we're going back and you do John Wick style crazy gore and, you know, stunts like that. I feel like that would be better, but I don't know. I don't hate this idea for Macaulay Culkin. I feel like it's going to happen in our lifetime. We're going to see a Home Alone reboot where he's the dad.
I would like where he's the dad and he maybe is like partnered up with his son against like the wet bandits or whoever.
I could
like
see that
working
happening.
As a team to keep them out of the house or something. And it's like, oh, I remember this from, here's a trick. I'll, you know, maybe he's taught him tricks over time. Like, I don't know.
I think the biggest challenge for Home Alone is just the world that we live in now. Like the toys that kids play with just, and like the things that are in children's homes, like are not the same that they were in the 1980s. Yeah, exactly. Just call the cops.
Pick up the phone.
That's the problem they had with the Home Sweet Home Alone. It's like the smart house shit. Like that just, it's not very cinematic or fun.
They could just do, And then it turns into like Megan, you know, I just watched Megan 2 recently. And it was all that, like the security system within the house and whatever.
AI is your friend. AI is good.
Yep.
Yeah. Sure. Did you see Macaulay Culkin said that his kids don't know that he's Kevin McAllister, but they recognize, like they know Home Alone and they like the movie and that he was, I guess, showing his kids like old family photos and they were like, who's that? They look just like Kevin McAllister.
It's unbelievable. Can't, like,
figure it out. I know.
What a bunch of idiots. He looks exactly the same.
He's a Macaulay Culkin and he does. Macaulay Culkin and Brenda Song playing sibling Lynxes in Zootopia 2.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize she was also one of the voices.
She was the sister Lynx. Fun. Yeah, it was fun.
And then for the first time in this Oscar cycle, we have three people who are now no longer plus money leading their races on DraftKings. Timothée Chalamet is now the odds-on favorite, -125 on DraftKings Sportsbook to win Best Actor. Jesse Buckley is pretty clearly running away with Best Actress, even though Hamnet not out yet, but critics have seen it, Gooch has seen it. People seem to really like it. And then Sean Penn is separating himself a little bit in Supporting Actor. Supporting Actress category is a mess, and it's going to come down to whichever studio campaigns the best for their person, basically, at this point. Though Ariana Grande remains the favorite. But Chalamet has pulled away a little bit. While One Battle pulls away for Best Picture and Director, which would be awesome to finally get Paul Thomas Anderson any Oscar.
True.
Though I would not, with the way Best Picture is voted on nowadays, you just can't rule anything out. And something could kind of pop up, whether it be Hamnet, whether it be Marty Supreme, or whether Sinners has a kind of second life out of it, which would not shock me at all if Sinners finds a second life kind of in the run. But yeah, now we have kind of three real favorites for the first time. And we said it last week. And shout out to Club Chalamet for reposting the video. Timothée Chalamet winning for this. All the people complaining last year about him losing to Adrian Brody, it's like so much better. We'll continue to stand on that. So it seems like he's going to run away with that. And now Gooch has the Marty Supreme jacket as well. So,
Oh, you got it?
That was big news.
Yeah. Nice. I got it. I waited in line.
That's why if you're watching on YouTube, Gooch is doing this from a closet because he had to move out of his apartment. He's now homeless. Yeah. He bought the $300 Marty Supreme jumpsuit.
Hey, you laugh, but I'm about to sell that jacket to Club Chalamet for $10,000.
At Boar's Head, we've been going back to school for over 115 years. And this year, every school lunch is reason to celebrate with the flavors your kids love and the exceptional quality you expect. Helping you make school lunch fresh, easy, and delicious. Ring the bell. The deli is open. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Anything lately you guys been watching, Robbie? Kelly, Robbie, do you have anything that you've seen lately that we haven't talked about?
Oh my God. Yeah. I had a pretty good week of watching a bunch of different things. Just watched Moonstruck for the first time.
And oh yeah.
Me and the fiance loved it. Oh my God. Just the old Italian people being funny. Like, oh my God. Loved that.
You know who lives in that apartment now?
Who?
Amy Schumer. She lives in the Moonstruck
really?
Apartment.
Wait, really?
Yep.
No way. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh You're my kidding. God. That's kind of sick.
That's amazing.
I'm not gonna lie. That's awesome.
Apartment.
Fuck. Yeah.
Jealous of that.
I saw Wake Up Dead Man and I absolutely loved it. Like, I thought it was.
I did too.
It's exactly what I want in a movie. Like, the Knives Out movies just hit for me in terms of being entertaining, funny. You get some unreal shots and lighting. And Josh O'Connor in that movie gives, like, one of my favorite performances of the whole year. I feel like he should be nominated for. I don't know if he'll get an Oscar nom. He'll probably get a Golden Globe nom, at least for the comedy musical department.
Yeah. Also, sneaky chance Glenn Close gets a nomination at the Oscars for supporting, and it's another loss.
Wouldn't shock me. Glenn yeah,
for Hunger for Sunrise on the Reaping. Or when does that come out?
Yeah, that's next year.
Sorry, next year. I was thinking about.
But
that
she's right in now. Wake Up Dead Man. Yeah.
Got
and
it,
she's
got it.
She's gonna I think there's a chance she gets it because the supporting actress category is weak and it would be another loss likely for Glenn Close in a career where we have to get her an Oscar at some point. And it can't be an honorary Oscar. It's gotta
do
be.
Do we? I think Hillbilly Elegy bars her.
The only other two
elegy, you know.
I watched Little Women for the first time this week and loved it.
Nice.
The Greta Gerwig Little Women, and I watched Roof Man two nights ago. Thought it was okay.
That's kind of where we were on Roof Man.
Yeah, I thought it enjoyable, but like I expected to love it, and I didn't love it.
Roof Man gets a little we didn't love the tone of Roof Man. It kind of comes in and out. We were like, oh, what?
It starts so strong. First hour of Roof Man is awesome.
It's also bizarrely similar to Logan Lucky in some ways too,
yeah,
which he's also in. Like. Literally, he escapes prison the same exact way as he escapes in Logan Lucky.
Yeah.
Kind of odd.
I thought about Charlotte. That. Yeah.
Yeah. Kelly, anything you've watched? I know you did a, not to spoil, we talked about this the other day, you did a double watch of All Her Fault on Peacock, correct?
Yes, I did. I watched All Her Fault accidentally. Well, not accidentally. It popped up on my TV and I said, oh my God, why is nobody talking about this? Sarah Snook, I'm obsessed. And it turns out it was like the minute that it went on. It was available. So I saw it before everybody saw it. And I was waiting for everybody to talk about it. And when I was home this past week, I made my family watch it and they loved it. But I'm in the middle of doing all my Christmas rewatches right now. I just did The Holiday and Love Actually, a back-to-back feature the other day. But I also watch, and I don't know if you guys have talked about it on the show already, but I have not heard a lot of people talking about it, that new show on Netflix, Beast in Me with Claire Danes.
Yeah, people. I've seen it. A couple people say they've watched and they like it quite a bit.
I really loved it. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. I really loved it. It's got Brittany Snow, Matthew Rhys, I think is the guy, mm-hmm. and you know, he's a billionaire. He's essentially like a real estate mogul, and the whole thing centers around this thing called like Jarvis Yards, essentially Hudson Yards, and so it's just very New York centric, but also like. Claire Danes is a writer and there's a serial killer aspect and it's like murder mystery, like, up in upstate New York a little bit. It's really, really good. And Claire Danes, I'm obsessed with her. Like, I'll watch anything she's in. I think she's an excellent actress, but she and Sarah Snook, I think, will be duking it out Golden Globes for best actress drama. You know,
Beast in Me, I'm going to give a chance. People have suggested it and I like, and I love Matthew Rhys. Claire Danes, Grace. Yeah, I'm going to have to try out. Yeah. Also,
and Matthew Rhys is, he might also run away with it. He was fucking awesome. I haven't seen him in something in a while.
It did end last week, but it is worth noting. We now have two of the three people in the world to watch The Morning Show on the same podcast right now. The third being our other esteemed coworker, former NHL player Ryan Whitney, also watches The Morning Show. Two of the only three people in the world to watch that garbage TV show.
Next time we're at dinner, we'll have to break it all down. Yeah, that show, I mean, it's awful. I'm about 20 minutes into the finale and I still haven't like finished it all the way because there's just too many fucking storylines.
It's a terrible sign. I'm 20 minutes into the finale.
Going into the final season, there were 25 open story threads between characters. 25.
It's awful.
You need to like chart this like they did with the Arrested Development, yeah. Like bits. Like,
oh, great website.
The bits graph. You got to do that with the storyline.
It's a preposterous show. I also Wake Up Dead Man. Love Wake Up Dead Man. I'll save kind of – you can go see on our letterbox what I thought about it. It'll be posted by the time this airs. We will talk about it when it comes out on Netflix. We almost did it early. Obviously, people not being here didn't make sense. And it's also not in AMC's, I think,
yeah,
right?
Is so that what it weird. Is? Yeah. Yeah, not an AMC season. Glass Onion was.
It's not in an AMC theaters. Ryan Johnson complained about it, but it's tough. It's like you did sign the you did sign a deal with Netflix.
I know.
Like, I don't like. I love Ryan Johnson, but like, it's like I can't defend that too much. But I really enjoyed it. Chair Company, amazing. I'm also going to preemptively say that the finale is great, even though I haven't watched it yet. It airs tonight after we record this. Sisu 2, I enjoyed. Not as good as the first one. Good action movie. I think they kind of leaned a little too heavily into what people liked in the first and didn't. But I guess that makes sense. I was hoping they'd have some new stuff. But it was still pretty good. Rental Family, I didn't love.
Yeah.
With Brendan Fraser. I also saw Rental Family at Alamo Drafthouse during what is considered a baby day screening, which is where they leave the lights turned up a little bit and the audio is quieter for babies and old people.
What?
So
that's because of that,
you hear everything in the theater, and the woman two seats down from me who ate her salad and then her hot dog with a fork and knife. It was the most distracting thing I've ever heard in a movie. It was unbelievable.
That's horrible.
That was crazy. And then I saw Jay Kelly. I loved Jay Kelly, but that is so right up my alley. We have very exciting, we have agreed on a lot of movies. There will not be a lot of agreement on Jay Kelly between me and Clemmer and Wake Up Dead Man as well. He left a scathing review of Wake Up Dead, scathing 3-star review of Wake Up Dead Man. So excited to talk about those. Gooch, and also, I like Train Dreams a lot on Netflix. Thought that was great. I know you're about to talk about it, Gooch. I am going to see It Was Just an Accident later tonight, which is going to potentially get a Best Picture nomination from the Oscars, international movie. And then if you like Pennywise stuff, the It Show has not been perfect, but the last episode was excellent. Excellent episode of that show. So it's good.
I gotta get into that.
Garbage next. Stephen King schlock. And like, that's enough for me. Gooch, go ahead.
So past week, I did do It Was Just an Accident last Saturday. I might have brought that up on the last episode, but very great. It'll definitely be in the foreign Best Picture category. Very deserving. I wouldn't be shocked if it's in the Best Picture nominee category as well. Mm-hmm. Has a very Coen's brother, like dark humor energy to it while covering a subject matter that, I mean, I just did not know like the dealings in Iran that well, like in terms of what's going on with their government. This director also is like a fugitive from the law. He's like had to make almost all of his movies in secrecy, including this one. Crazy stuff. Watched Thief with my dad this week while I was home for Thanksgiving. That is just the ultimate rewatch with a dad. Thief, absolute banger. James Caan in that black leather jacket. So cool. Saw Eternity. Jeff, you saw that as well. I saw your Letterboxd review. I don't know if we're going to do a full review of that movie. Probably not. But my thoughts were pretty much the same. The first hour is like really great, and then it just runs a little too long.
Yeah, it's a really nice concept. You pick which, like, what you want your soul to live in post-death, and she arrives right after her husband essentially arrives and dies, but then her husband she lost at a young age when he died is also there waiting for him. That's the premise of the movie. I like the concept, but you're right. It kind of runs out of room where you're like, this is like they had about a good hour worth of material, and then they were like, I don't know what to do with this anymore. And that's kind of how I felt about it. So it sounds like you seem to agree on that. It just kind of
It was also like the most enjoyable Miles Teller has been in a movie for me in years, pretty much since Top Gun. I found him very charming. And Mr. Lipa, Callum Turner, incredibly handsome. I don't know if he's a great actor, I'll tell you what, when he was working that bar in this movie and he's wearing that suit, I was like, I can see the James Bond fan casting. Like, I can definitely see it. He's dapper and stunning. What else did I see? Let me think for 2 seconds. Knives Out, saw that. Josh O'Connor stock through the roof. Like Robbie said, God, he's so just
good. Yeah,
it's such a great performance. Like,
has a very excellent Star Wars joke. Like,
I loved it.
Excellent Star Wars joke.
So that, and then I've also been, I started reading the Odyssey, like really started reading it, got the copy that Nolan recommended, the Emily Wilson, translation. I'm about 100 pages in. I'm getting prepped. I'm getting fucking jacked for this movie. I've been jacked, but goddamn, like
the Odyssey,
we're 6 months out and
stories.
I wake up thinking about this movie. I go to sleep thinking about this movie. I cannot wait for it. I'd also like to add, this was a while ago, but I did see, since we're talking Stranger Things, I saw the Stranger Things play on Broadway this summer.
Oh, you saw it?
Yes.
Whoa. I want to see it.
If you're in town with your family or you're a New York City resident, this is like, if you're looking for a popcorn play to go see, like something fun, I guess it's a little dark, but this is the one to go see. It's like, in terms of like on stage production, it's incredible. Blows. It's the same guy who originally made the Harry Potter Cursed Child play, and he came over and he made this for Netflix, and the onstage stuff just blows anything else I've ever seen out of the water.
I read a tweet, I gotta find it, where because wait, you just said it right, the guy who did this did the Harry Potter thing, right? That's the whole
thing.
It was somebody talking about that. I gotta find the tweet. It's very funny, it's very tongue-in-cheek, but it was like, anyone who wants to make spin-offs of properties like this, Harry Potter into a Broadway show, is a pervert. That's what it said. I was like, which, like, it is a little, like, pervert is the wrong word, but it is kind of funny. This really weird pointed spin-off of these like big properties and books and shows into like Broadway. It is, I don't know, it kind of made me laugh.
There's something funny about making a Broadway show for Netflix.
Yes.
Yeah.
They had the Netflix like logo come on like the like
does it say ta-dun, like curtains?
Yeah, they did the ta-dun. Yes, I swear to God.
That's crazy. It's almost like reverse Wicked, reverse Phantom, like how they all started as plays and then they become big blockbusters. It's like, why not go backwards? Cursed Child.
It is the thing. We said it last week when we were reviewing Wicked. I was like, it's like in the end, it's like, it's very funny. It's like, this is just, it's just Wicked fan. Like, that book is Wicked fan fiction.
Yeah.
Significantly darker book from what I've been told. The Wicked.
Oh, very weird. Yeah. And also hysterical in the context of like Wicked's a dream. Like it's very, backstory very, to a dream. Yeah. You know, not Wicked, but Wizard of Oz. Yeah.
There's my brother's reading Wicked the book right now. And he said that there's a point with Dr. Dillamond who, his fate is kind of ambiguous. Like it is, but it's not. In the book, he gets like sliced across the throat and the whole class sees it. It's like, we're not seeing that in the play, and we're not seeing that they're universal.
Fellas, you already know what time it is. It's time to level up. And Blue Chew just dropped something crazy. I'm talking next level championship belt gold plated energy. Blue Chew Gold is the newest innovation from the number one chewable ED brand. This ain't your grandpa's little blue pill. This is the 4-in-1 beast that's setting the gold standard for performance. We're talking two ingredients for blood flow to keep that rocket pumping, mixed with apomorphine and oxytocin to turn up the arousal and connection in your brain and body. Blue Chew Gold dissolves under your tongue and works in as little as 15 minutes. That means you can get it on quicker and stay in the game longer. Elevation without hesitation. This is peak passion and peak performance in a single tablet. If your bed could talk after this, it'd be asking for a break. Make life easier by getting harder and discover your options at BlueChew.com. And we got a special deal for our listeners. Get 10% off your first month of Blue Chew Gold with code BIGSCREEN. That's promo code BIGSCREEN. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this podcast.
All right, we're going to wrap it up with top 10 talking animal movies. We're going to give Kelly and Robbie, since we only have four, we're going to give them the extra slots at the end. But the order is going to be Kelly, nice. Robbie, Jeff, Gooch, and then we snake back towards the end. So, Kelly, what is the number one? Also, I'm going to leave this a little open because I think there's some picks that I don't know if you can consider it talking animals. But, Kelly, you go first. Top 10 talking animal movies. What's number one? Combined list.
I had a hard time because my number one, I'm not so sure it's a talking animal situation, but I'm going to leave it on my list and throw it out later. So I'm going to go number one is The Little Mermaid. Little Mermaid,
yes.
All the talking animals under the sea. We got Scuttle, we got Flounder, we got Sebastian. It's everybody talking and they're talking to humans. And I think it totally plays. And I just rewatched the, that's another thing I could add to the list. The Halle Bailey version a couple days ago. Still good. They're all good.
She is in a cornball looking romantic comedy coming out. Some like Italian, like she moves to Italy temporarily and accidentally gets engaged or something.
I'm ready for that. I'm very, very ready to see that shit. It's gonna be great.
The tagline being she went for the pasta but got lost in the sauce.
Oh my god, no, that sounds fake.
It's on the poster.
So bad. She like goes to say, she like hooks up with this guy and he's like, yeah. And we have this Tuscan villa and it's empty and no one's there. And she's like, and books a flight and just shows up and stays and pretends to be the fiance. It's crazy.
Lost in the sauce.
I can't wait to see it.
Robbie, you're up second.
I'm going to go with a pick that feels very me and maybe Jeff and Gooch as well. Feels very nerdy, but I think it's deserving of this. I'm going to go Guardians of the Galaxy for Rocket Raccoon.
Oh, wow. Wow. I did not see that coming.
On my list.
This is a movie that, I mean, the concept, it took a talking raccoon and a talking tree. I remember people laughing about it when I brought it up on the rundown. And then KFC watched it. It was like, yeah, I cried. It might be the greatest movie I've ever seen. It's like you take them so seriously. By the end of the trilogy, you're like, I think this was all about the talking raccoon.
That's a great pick. Didn't even think of putting it on my list.
Like the third movie's like all like animal rights.
And it's awesome. It's so good.
Well, for number three, I'll take it off the board. Would have been my 1-1, Lion King. Obviously, the live action with the Beyonce.
One and a half?
No. The animated original Lion King. It just doesn't. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that for me. One of the few perfect movies ever made, in my opinion. Timeless too. Timeless, though. I have noticed. I have a bunch of my friends have kids who are around like the Disney age now where like they're watching them. It hasn't caught on with them. Like a lot of the older ones, like Little Mermaid, huge. A lot of those, I was kind of surprised by that.
Same with my nieces. Lion King's not really, you're right.
Yeah. It's not done a big hit, which is a bummer. Cause for growing up, that was my favorite along with Toy Story. Gooch, which by the way, I'll just say Toy Story does not count despite the fact they have fake talking animals like Ham.
I don't think Ham counts.
I didn't put that, but yeah.
Gooch, you have back to back. I actually think you're going to take one of mine, but we'll see if you take it. If not, it's definitely going to be my number six pick.
Ooh. All right. First pick I'm going with. I think this is probably what you're going to go with. Shrek for the talking donkey, which, of course. One of the best talking animals of all time. One of the best animated features of all time. The first ever winner a best animated feature at the Academy Awards. Just a true masterpiece, and I think only gets better with age.
Would have been rightfully nominated for best picture back in the day, I think, too. Had it been like expanded, and had they done like, you know, like what Up got,
10 noms.
I mean, in terms of like influence, like it completely changed a lot of things for animation, not just from the way it looks, but like the writing style and the way that jokes are delivered. I mean, like Zootopia, I think, draws a lot from Shrek in terms of how they integrate adult humor into the movie. So yeah, Shrek, which is weird to talk that like technical about Shrek, but yeah, no, I think it's like, I really do think it's like a brilliant movie. By the way,
the logic of the Zootopia universe works so much better than Cars for me. I just wanted to throw that out there.
You hate Cars. That's
fair, I guess.
The Cars universe never makes sense to me. Zootopia,
I'm not a Cars fan either.
That's one of my Radiator Springs is a land at Disneyland in Anaheim, and they have the Radiator Springs Racers, which is basically just a dupe of Test Track. You ever done Test Track in Walt Disney World? Mm-hmm. And there was one time I was on the ride, and there was a huge, huge, like, Disney dork in the front seat. Like, I kind of wish I had done this rant and recorded it. makes me look like I was jealous. I'm like, I can't even achieve that status. He was ranting about, he's like, you know, people don't think Cars makes any sense, but this is why. And he was ranting, like, we're going through radiators, like there's a waterfall, and he, in this fake car, he's like, it makes more sense than people realize. And I just kept my mouth shut, but I wish I would have. I wish I would record it going
back.
You're
going to argue with that guy?
Excuse me, sir. Yeah. You think car Jay Leno makes sense, sir? Anyway, Gooch, Shrek, great pick. Next up.
Turns out it was just Larry the Cable Guy just using his voice.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
For my fifth pick, this probably feels a little obvious, from David Fincher, Fight Club. The Talking Penguin.
That seems like a bit of a stretch, but I'll take it.
Sly. Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I'll take it.
It's one of the best movies of all time. Come on.
I thought about taking Batman Returns. It was like the penguin talks. I don't know.
Yeah, this one literally has a talking penguin.
Yeah, it does.
You did not take my pick, which I also believe in the short lifespan of Project Big Screen. It's the first time movie we on list in back-to-back a week, because I took it last week as a great movie to watch on Thanksgiving. That's Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Oh, this was on my list, yeah.
One of the more elite movies. A movie that, if you told me you think it's Wes Anderson's best movie, I'd have absolutely no argument against that. A movie which fascinates me that he made that, and then I like Isle of Dogs, but it's nowhere near as good as this. It's fascinating that as like a director, his live action stuff has kind of become at times a little lifeless and a little like going through the motions of his style, where he did the same thing with an animated movie. Like Fantastic Mr. Fox was great and had so much like spunk and like pizzazz. And then like Isle of Dogs was so like by the book and comic. It was just weird. It's strange that he did it in both animated and live action. So
I liked Isle of Dogs, actually. I thought Isle of Dogs was like very, very real emotionally for an animated
movie. Like the movie. And I've liked it more over time too, but not as much as this, which I love. Robbie, seven.
I'd also add Fantastic Mr. Fox in terms of like behind the scenes VO work. Those videos of Wes Anderson working with George Clooney recording like the noises that the fox makes is just fantastic, like so great. Like they have them like literally just I was gonna say that and then I was like, stop myself. But they got them like, you know, like on like they like are basically like filming the movie. They're having, it's not motion capture, they're just having him go through like all the actions. It's great.
Next up, Robbie at seven.
Give me the live action Scooby-Doo written by James Gunn. Yeah. I'm taking back-to-back James Gunn movies. He knows how to write a movie with a talking animal in it. He succeeds in writing animal stories. I loved this movie, loved it when I was a kid. I love watching it back now. I feel like it's one of the most nostalgic movies for me personally, kind of both of the Scooby-Doo movies, but the first one in particular with the Mystery Island, right?
Scary Island.
Disco ball. Everything about that. I love Scrappy at the end. Spoilers if you haven't seen it. Love it.
Whoa. Scrappy's the woat.
Such good Scrappy casting, too. Talk about casting a movie just spot on across the board.
Do you know that there's a deleted scene? It's no longer shown when they show it on TV. Maybe it's like a music rights thing. But do you remember the scene of Velma like being drunk at the bar singing "You're Just Too Good to Be True"? And it's like the demons come through, but she doesn't realize because she's drunk. Does anybody else? It's a deleted scene if you go see it. But it was in the original, and now it's you never see it anymore. And I don't know what happened. It must have had to do with music. But she's like drunk, and she takes her glasses off, and she's doing like a whole dance in that like bar scene while there's, you know, the whatevers are all around.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what scene you're talking about now.
Yeah. After I described it so perfectly. But listen, if you know the scene that I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. But it's strange that it's not in the movie anymore.
Kelly, you have number 8. You have 2 picks left.
I'm going to go from the ocean over to the land, and I'm going to go with A Bug's Life. That's one of my favorite movies of all time. I'm a big animated movie person, like I've said, but I think Bug's Life was totally different than the other animated animal movies I had seen, especially at the time. I was obsessed with it. I was obsessed with like the Hopper, the grasshopper being a bad guy. And I just, you know, the community of the ants and just showing all the different kinds of bugs I thought was really funny. And I think that it also had that same tone in there were adult jokes buried within like the kid stuff. And I think that it still holds up. It's a very funny movie.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated. So Bug's Life was on my list too. I'm always fascinated by A Bug's Life, and you and I are of the same age, and so maybe that's part of it. But it's one of those Pixar movies that isn't talked about enough, which is odd because it's also a movie that has a lot of GIFs and like memes that you see on social media now and then, just like reaction
shots. It's star-studded.
Yes, I think it's awesome. I love A Bug's Life, and it's always remained one of my favorites from Pixar. But it's kind of, I feel like it gets disrespected amongst the other Pixar movies.
I agree.
In terms of success. And it was an early one. It was the second one. It's our third one, I guess, after Toy Story 2. Or second one.
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to go see it. 98 it came out. Wow. It's crazy.
Yeah, and 2 was, I think, 90s. Yeah, so. Good pick at number 8. Number 9, Robbie, your last pick?
There's so many movies that I want to pick, and there's so many classics, but I'm going to go with a more recent one that holds a special place in my heart, and I'm going to pick Paddington 2.
Oh, that would have been a whiff if we didn't have if Paddington didn't appear on this list.
I know. You got to have Paddington Bear on the list. I mean, he's one of the greatest animated characters we've gotten in the 21st century. Paddington 2, I think, is just like a perfect movie. People joke about it now, how perfect it is, but it really is like the perfect family movie.
It has, there's no negative discourse around Paddington. Like, not even like.
How could there be?
Not even in an attempt to like be like different. People are like, yeah, Paddington 2 is great. People just say it's awesome. Widely accepted as like an incredible movie.
Yeah.
Last pick, Kelly. And then we'll talk about
okay, this is the movie that I was saying that I wasn't sure if it counted. I have a backup choice if it doesn't count, but I really would like to choose The Lorax. I know it's Dr. Seuss. And it's like, are they animals or are they, what are they? And there are some animals in that movie that do talk and there are some that don't. Like there are the birds, they don't talk, but then there are like other things that do talk and they're all kind of like fleeing their place because they can't live there anymore because they're cutting down all the truffula trees. Like there are, you know, animal moments, but then the Lorax himself, I don't really know what he is, but that's one of my favorite movies. Like
he's like a nothing. He's like a...
He's a Lorax.
He's a Lorax.
I think he's the Lorax.
there are moments in that movie, like when they are cutting down all the trees and all the animals of the forest have to leave because they have nowhere to stay. Like those animals have like moments of conversation, but it's not straight up talking. And again, they're Seuss animals. So it's like, does that count? Do you guys think that counts? Also, that's my choice. I love it so much.
I don't know if it counts.
You don't think?
If they're not like, if they're Seussian, if they're all like Lorax type, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's right on the line. It's right on the line.
Go with the backup. Go with the backup.
All right. I'll go with the backup, which is Shark Tale. Shark Tale needs attention.
Oh, nice.
I know I'm going with two. I didn't want to go two oceanic movies, but Shark Tale is so fucking funny. The animation of Shark Tale is something that I'll always think about. That was another one. Like anything underwater, I think I really just love the way that the like fins move and everything. Of course, the Angelina Jolie fish. I can't think of her name. She was hot. Like Will Smith fish is very funny.
Martin Scorsese fish.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. There were a lot of good like moments in that movie too. And I don't think it's been talked about recently enough.
I thought you were going to go with Land Before Time, and that was going to be the question of, do you count that because it's dinosaurs? Because you were tweeting about it the other day, because apparently they're going to
I was. Yeah. I put it on my Instagram story.
Yeah, there's teases that they're going to be doing an animated one. But so I don't know if that would count as dinosaurs. These
people, I'll tell you right now, it's these people who are fans and they're coming together and they've created a Land Before Time short. So not a movie, but they've created the
short. That's worked, though. That's worked before, right? They've done those shorts.
You get like greenlit like that. Yeah.
Yes. So in my head, I'm like, all right, is this happening? And I guess Universal has the rights to Land Before Time. And so they are not they're not as involved, I guess, or they're not involved at all right now. But Land Before Time was one of the best like stories I've ever seen. And it really just, that nostalgia is too deep for me. Like maybe I'm just like entrenched in it too bad and I'm overhyping or whatever. But yeah, dinosaurs, do dinosaurs count?
I don't think they would. I would count them. No, they're animals. No.
What about maybe they do.
More than the Lorax, respectfully.
More than the Lorax. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Because they did exist.
Oh, no, they were considered animals, I guess, technically. I don't know my paleontology too well, I guess. Yeah, so I guess that would have counted.
Yeah.
We left off a bunch, obviously. We left off
some good ones. Finding Nemo, Ratatouille.
Oh, my gosh, Finding Nemo.
We had a quick bathroom break earlier in the show. Kelly brought it up when Robbie was, and I were running to the bathroom, that there was a great Ratatouille joke in Zootopia 2. Very funny.
It's really good.
Very heavy laugh. Yeah.
Like a guffaw. Like, I think that's when I texted you being like, I am loving this movie right now.
Homeward Bound. Land Before Time. Flushed Away, the story about the rats in the toilets.
I liked Flushed Away. Yes.
Flush Away was stupid. I didn't like that.
I brought it up at Thanksgiving. I swear. I told my niece, I was like, you should watch Flushed Away. She likes mice right now.
Oh,
this, I guess, isn't surprising when you talk about what it is, but there are some bad talking animal movies. Some bad.
Well, nobody said Dr. Doolittle, and I was a little surprised by that.
I enjoy the first Dr. Doolittle.
How about
after that?
Little?
Oh, Stuart Little's a good one. Yeah.
Stuart Little's
classic.
Good.
Classic. Madagascar on there.
I had Madagascar on my list.
Oh,
I had the Aristocats.
Yeah, any of the Planet of the Apes. Yeah,
Babe is a weird one. I thought about Babe earlier.
Kind of whiffed on that one.
Yeah. Also, Balto. I wanted to talk about Balto, but I feel like people aren't as passionate about Balto as I am. Do you guys know Balto?
I like Balto. Oh yeah.
You gotta watch Balto. He's an Iditarod sled dog, and he is like, he lives in this like snowy town or whatever, and there's a torrential storm coming, and there's these kids that need a vaccine, and nobody can get there because the snow. So Balto goes, and he's bringing the vaccine to the kid. It's very intense. And there's a statue of Balto in Central Park.
Surprise, Robbie didn't pick Ferdinand. John Cena.
Honestly, one that I really like wanted on the list, but I just couldn't fit on there is Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. I think that movie's incredible.
Yeah, underrated. Very good. Yep.
Death is the villain. So metal.
if Kirk was here right now, he would tell a story of his producer, Dave Coleman, didn't take his kid to see Puss in Boots because he is a fucking idiot and thought it was an X, like an R-rated, like.
Like pussy or boots?
In a title. Fucking come on moron. Now. I had to tell that story because I know he would have been here.
Dave, no.
Fucking moron.
So bad.
Brain. Good list, though. That's a good, some curveballs there.
Yeah, Fight Club will
definitely
list.
Piss some people off on Twitter. So that was a great call by Dave.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's definitely not what I was trying to do.
Right.
Two James Gunn movies on there. And then we did get an Owls of Gahool reference earlier in the show. Just put the bow on that.
Hey, y'all. It's Gooch. Congratulations on making it this far into Project Big Screen Episode 9. Now I'm going to tell you how to join our fan rankings, which all that is a follow from us on Letterboxd. And today I want you to comment below with a book or comic book series that you would like to see adapted into a feature film. Kelly Keegs, big reader of books. Robbie Fox, big reader of comic books. So in honor of them, comment below with your choice and make sure to include your Letterboxd handle in that comment, whether you're watching on YouTube, listening on Spotify, and I will follow you from our Letterboxd account and you'll be part of our fan rankings. Also, if you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like, make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen or watch. Every interaction really does help us more than you can imagine. Thank you all so much for your support so far. Now back to the show.
Thank you, Robbie and Kelly, for coming on. I'm sure we'll have you fill in. I'm sure we'll need to fill in again at some point. God, we could do a little Stranger Things breakdown, which we will do more of. And again, obviously, Kelly has her podcast, Taylor Watch. Check that out. Also, Robbie will be doing a significantly further breakdown of Stranger Things.
Like the whole episode will spend on it.
Check it out as well. Next week, what's even out next week in theaters? I don't even fucking know at this point. We will be doing Knives Out, Wake Up Dead Man, Knives Out. We will be doing Jay Kelly when they hit Netflix.
Next week is the 70 millimeter re-release of Guardians of the Ga'Houl.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Ga'Houl, the big IMAX release.
Could you imagine?
Jay Kelly is next week. We're reviewing Jay Kelly, which I do know there's some strongly differing opinions on that. Clemmer fucking hated it. And I know Kirk and I loved it. I just think Kendrick liked it, or I assume Kendrick will like it. I don't know. Have you seen it yet, Gooch?
Which one is that?
Sorry, Jay Kelly.
I have not seen it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so we'll be talking Jay Kelly next week, and then I don't know what the second movie will be yet. But there's kind of a lull.
Fackham Hall. We could do Fackham Hall, the Downton Abbey spoof movie that's coming out.
There's a Downton Abbey spoof movie coming out?
What?
Yeah.
What's
it's
that?
It's very funny. Called Fackham Hall.
Really?
I'm very
next week. Oh God! Next week is Five Nights at Freddy's. Oh Jesus!
Oh, I love Five Nights at Freddy's. You don't like that, Jeff?
I'm not too. Oh well, whatever. I'll give it a chance. You know, give it a chance. Oh God! Matthew Lillard, speaking of Scooby Doo in that movie.
Yeah,
I love him.
All right, that's it. As always, like and subscribe wherever you're watching. We'll talk to you next time.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One sweet tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
We had help.
On August 21st.
We have a story.
Mutiny arrives on the big screen.
Who are you?
It is, trust me.
Jason Statham stars in the action movie to end your summer.
What do you want?
Vengeance.
Mutiny. Rated R.
Whoop. Sleep better, train smarter, recover faster, and feel healthier. Understand and optimize your sleep. Get coaching and insights for every age, stage, and cycle. Track over 140 habits. Get a 360 view of your training and workouts. Never miss a second of data with a wireless and waterproof charger. Expect all new features all the time.